Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Let's now go out to the River Islands guest line because it's time for Clear to Play, where we take you inside the tent and get you updated on the latest injuries in the Bay. Proud to partner with UCSF Health on this segment and bring in Professor of Orthopedic Surgery, Dr. Nirav Pandya. Doc, how you doing? Happy Monday.
Yeah, happy Monday to you guys, too. How are you all doing?
We're doing all right. Everything considered, 49ers get blown out in Green Bay, 38-10. It could be worse. It's Thanksgiving week, trying to be a little bit more happy about things after that Niner loss. But there's plenty, of course, to talk about injury-related for the 49ers. We've just been talking about Brock Purdy's shoulder, so why don't we start there? Kyle Shanahan spoke earlier today, Doc, and said Brock did some light throwing, and it went all good. They didn't push it that hard, but he did that light throwing, and the pain hadn't come back. He had two MRIs. Kyle Shanahan confirmed that earlier today, two MRIs last week. Does this just feel to you like run-of-the-mill shoulder soreness, or is there something more going on here with Brock? What do you think, Doc?
I think whenever you get two MRIs kind of back-to-back, you do get a little bit more concerned that, number one, are they looking for something more specific? Is there a tear in the cartilage or something that they're really looking for that explains your symptoms, or was he getting better and did something new pop up during that week that caused the second MRI? So I think that's number one, the first point of concern. I think number two is the fact that any time someone's had elbow surgery and then their shoulder starts bothering them on the same side, you do get a little bit more concerned as well, too. So you're just making sure, was there some elbow soreness maybe that caused him to overuse his shoulder and is it actually an entire arm issue? Or are you worried about the shoulder issue then starting to call issues down by the elbow? So definitely something a little bit more concerning, particularly at that position. And the fact that he threw today is a very positive sign. So hopefully as the week goes on, he feels better and it was just a little bit of irritation and nothing to worry about.
That's interesting to note. I think McCaffrey is someone else we've been talking about. You know, we've been asking, is this who he is? Is this just, you know, you come off Achilles tendonitis? Maybe he's hesitant. Is this something where when somebody has that issue, is it him being hesitant or is it, you know, the result of the injury with that Achilles tendonitis?
I think in general, the fact that they haven't talked about him, you know, having soreness or, you know, you don't, besides maybe not that burst being there, you don't necessarily see him limping or having other compensation. I really think this is just more of a function of he just didn't have a normal period of time to get ready for the season. I'm sure Lowe can talk about this, is you get your reps in training camp, you kind of ease into the season, and then you kind of are ready to go. Here, he didn't have that usual ramp up of time of getting his body ready, and then suddenly you're thrown into an NFL season after resting and you're trying to perform at the same level. So I think it's more a function of, this is what happens when you have this much time off and you're trying to go full speed in the middle of the NFL season while everyone else has been practicing, as opposed to this being an issue with this injury. Because with the injury, you'd expect soreness, pain, he's limping. You don't see that. You just don't see his timing and burst there. So I think this is more a reflection of where he's coming in at the season, as opposed to there being an issue with him not being the same CMC that we saw in years past.
Doc, Low Neil here. How would you handle this situation with Brock Purdy? When you know you're the doctor and you understand what this young man is approaching, a new contract, a new deal, extension, all the things that are surrounding it, how would you handle this situation if you were in that seat as the team doctor, when you know what's riding on this and is it worth it? How do you put your hands around this situation, just in general?
Yeah, I think in general, whenever, you know, he depends on his arm. His arm is what's going to be the thing that gets him to his next contract. So I would tell him, like, look, there's a risk of structural issues with this elbow, with this shoulder. Is it really worth pushing yourself and pushing through pain and then suddenly going down the route of needing off-season surgery? Because you imagine there aren't many NFL quarterbacks who have gotten elbow surgery and shoulder surgery on their throwing arm. So if he understands those risks and he's willing to say, look, I'm going to push through and try to make it through the season, I understand that. As long as he understands there's that possibility if there's something more major going on and that can impact a contract, then you kind of laid it out for him. If this really is just simply, look, I landed on my shoulder, it's sore, and it's just a pain issue, you let him know that as well, too. But I think with him in particular, you have to really, really be cautious, just given everything that's riding, both in terms of timing and what he's gone through before in that arm.
Doc Pandya, UCSF Health, cleared to play here on Willard and Dibbs, but it's Grandy, Loneal, and Hutch here filling in for Willard and Dibbs. Doc, one of the other Niner stars who did not play yesterday in Green Bay, Nick Bosa, dealing with one hip and one oblique on different sides. I mean, for a guy, an edge rusher who's got to be flexible and he's got to be bendy around tackles and try to get to quarterbacks, those seem like major, major injuries. How concerning is something like that, and the fact that he wasn't able to go in a really all-important game like yesterday? How concerned are you that this might not be something that potentially could lead to off-season surgery for Nick Bosa?
Yeah, no, definitely a high level of concern. I mean, he's just someone who is shown again and again. He'll play through the discomfort. He's always wanted to be out there on the field. And it's really hard at that position to do what he does with those type of injuries. And I think people remember back when he was in Ohio State, I actually think he had core muscle surgery, which involves a lot of this general area, on both sides in the past. So the fact that he's dealt with something like this before, this is clearly important to the position he plays. He puts a tremendous amount of force across his body, and he's, you know, kind of re-injured the same area. I think it's definitely something of concern that may potentially need surgery in the offseason. It's just really hard to play, even if you're having a lot of, you know, kind of pain relief at that position. If those muscles aren't working, he's just not going to be very effective. So something that you do worry about, him needing that surgery in the offseason, or even earlier if he can't really kind of get through this discomfort that he's dealing with right now.
Doc, tell us something. You look at Greenlaw, here's a guy that's coming off the Achilles injury. How do you judge a guy? What is that predicated on? What is typically the amount of time, and when can we see this guy at 100%? I know he's been released to practice. How do you gauge something of Achilles magnitude?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think usually, you know, we know that biologically, right, the kind of the repair usually is healed right around 6 months. But then there's that long period of time you need, you know, that 9, 10, 11 month period after surgery where you get your muscle strength back. So there are things you can do to test muscle strength. You can test flexibility. You can get other, you know, MRIs and ultrasounds to see if things are healed. But at the end of the day, what you're really looking for is that player playing with confidence? Because it doesn't matter how much we as physicians say everything's healed, your strength is back. But if you don't have that confidence in your leg, you're not going with that same burst, you're not making the same cuts, then that's what's going to draw you out longer than be maybe month 11, month 12. And if you look at most people coming off Achilles injuries, whether it's the NBA, whether it's the NFL, that first season is usually a wash. It's the second season when that statistics come back. Because for a lot of these players, they're playing explosively. Once you tear your Achilles, you remember how that feels. That's something that you really have to come over mentally just to be able to really explode off that calf. So, you know, you base it off what the player's saying. You're seeing how confident they're playing. But you really have to have that expectation that it's next year when you're going to see him back at that top level, not this season, what's remaining left.
Hmm. Interesting. Doc, great stuff as always. We appreciate you taking out the time. And happy early Thanksgiving. We'll catch up with you again next week.
You too. You guys have a great Thanksgiving as well, too.
Yep. All right. Much
thanks,
appreciated.
Doc.
Don't eat so much turkey, Doc.
The proceeding was sponsored by UCSF Health. We appreciate Doc's time as always. I mean, he might be in lockstep with you guys talking about Dre Greenlaw's return. Why rush it? And if you're 5-6, you go into Buffalo, you lose that game, you're 5-7. Maybe you don't play Brock the rest of the year. Maybe you don't play Bosa the rest of the year. Maybe you don't play Trent the rest of the year. And you just say, hey, Dre, you'll be back to 100% September of 2025, and we'll go get it then.
See, go ahead.
No, I think it could be a blessing in disguise with all that stuff. This team is so much attrition from going through the playoffs year after year. I'm sure you know and these seasons are an extra game longer now. Some of these guys that are coming back from all that stuff, yeah. If you just say shut it down and actually get them some rest, I'm sure you know how valuable it is.
No question. I think Greenlaw won't play this week. You're playing in Buffalo. It's too cold. You can't risk that. I'm willing to bet that he doesn't play this week. Now, I would play maybe at home. I'd let him get a game or two in because, hey, look, we're going to let you play these two games, maybe the last two games if they're here. But I wouldn't pay him in this type of weather. And with quarterback, I wouldn't either. After listening to the doc and hear him saying that, hey, look, if I was the doctor, I would say, look, you've already had surgery. We don't want to. You have a lot to risk. When you're hearing the docs say things like that, make you say, okay, what should this guy do? And what I've heard out of that, I don't know if this guy's going to play this week.
Mm. That's your moneymaker. You are Brock Purdy.
Right.
You are a guy who relies on your right arm you might want to shut it down if you're trying to get paid an exorbitant amount of money this offseason. And with Dre Greenlaw, I think that might be up to him because he's worked so hard to come back. I wonder if he just wants to get back out there so desperately. And if they are theoretically still in it, that juice he can bring would be valuable. But yeah, like we've been talking about it. People have been like, well, when Greenlaw comes back, you're not the same after an Achilles injury, let alone in that first season. So whatever it is, I'm sure it's still probably better than what you've got from Devondre Campbell for the most part, but is it worth it to put him out there? I don't know.
I also think maybe when we were talking towards the beginning of the season about when Greenlaw would potentially return, you were thinking maybe it's for an 8-4 team and not like a 5-7 team, and that makes a giant difference, right? If you're fighting for the division, you're atop the division, maybe you're fighting for potentially maybe the 1 seed, the 2 seed, whatever the case may be, you might be willing to take a little bit more of a risk. Not that you want to ever risk a player's health, but you might be more willing to roll the dice a little bit. As opposed to having to do it for a team that might be 5-7 when Greenlaw's finally ready to go. There's a major difference in what you are even playing for at that point.
No question. I absolutely agree with you, and that's why I just don't think he plays this game. I think that Greenlaw will touch the field this year. I really believe he'll play, you know, 2 or 3 games at the end of the year. But you don't play this guy this week in a cold. You don't know what the temperature is. It's Buffalo. It's freezing. Your Achilles is already tight. You have to loosen up. It's like a rubber band, and now you have to go out there and play in this type of weather. It's no way the organization is going to risk Greenlaw. Even if he looks good, you don't play him this week. Not this week.
I'm with you. I think they might take the full 21 days on the ramp up and just see where he's at, just to get him back in practice.
Right.
At the very least, even if it's just out of deference to him and his desire to come back and play. But at this point, it's no matter who comes back, I'm not sure it's going to really matter. It's just, does he want to get back out there? He's a guy that, you know, he's going to have to get a new contract. Mm-hmm. So does he want a little bit of reps and think he can show something? I'm not sure, but yeah, I think with Greenlaw, you don't risk it this week at all. Maybe the Rams game in 3 weeks from now, but this thing might be wrapped up.
That Rams game is the Thursday night game, by the way. So that would be you have to get him ready a couple of days earlier than otherwise. If that was a Sunday game, 21 days from now would be what, the 16th of December, which would be 6 days before Week 16 in Miami. Maybe that's the day we see Greenlaw debut. But as you guys are talking about, maybe by that point, you've been eliminated from the playoffs if things continue to not go well. So we'll see how it all plays out. Shanahan speaking earlier today, they have opened the practice window on Dre Greenlaw. Brock Purdy did some light throwing. He said the pain did not return. Seems like slight good news there, but we'll see how it goes the rest of the week. Okay, time for a break on Willard and Dibbs. No Willard and Dibbs this week for Thanksgiving. It's Mark, Randy, Lo Neal, and Jake Hutchinson. And safe holiday travel starts at Valvoline Instant Oil Change, your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Expert technicians check fluids, tire pressure, wipers, lights, batteries, and more. For locations and coupons, visit BayAreaOilChange.com. That's BayAreaOilChange.com. More Willard and Dibbs with Grandy, Lowe, and Hutch next on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, he was like
now. Back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
There we go, Lo.
Y'all like that voice, how your boy Lo come in there. Hey.
Smoothly.
I came at the door. I said it before. I'll never let the mic magnetize me no more. Hey. But it's biting me to rhyme. I can't hold back. I'm looking for my line. Taking off my coat. Clearing my throat. My rhymes will be kicking until I hit my last note.
Ooh.
Hey! Let's get it.
Hell yeah.
Well, that sure as hell ain't Willard and Dibs, huh?
No. Dibs can't do that. Shut up, Dibs. Go to hell, Dibs. Nice turnaround, baby, back there on the turntables. Baby, do what you do, baby boy.
That was not live. That was Lo Neal about an hour ago here on 95.7 The Game. The great Lo Neal filling in on Willard and Dibs this week. It's Mark, Randy, Lo Neal, and Jake Hutchinson. Of course, Lo, one of the greatest fullbacks of all time. Hutch, you read him on Niners, all things Bay Area sports on 95.7 The Game and all over Odyssey here in the United States. Does a great job with us. He's down in Santa Clara for Niners all the time. going up to the city, though, for this week, joining us here on Willard and Dibs. Having a lot of fun here this week here on 95.7 The Game. And it's a rough day for the Niners because they did fall to Green Bay 38-10. But we're having a lot of fun alongside Loneal and Hutchinson. My name is Mark Randy, and all guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands and Lathrop. The guests include Steve Kerr, who will join us tomorrow here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. I'm looking forward to that. Also, Mark Schlereth. We'll get him to break down Niners. That's coming up tomorrow as well. We got that to look forward to coming up tomorrow. But today, guys, we got to continue breaking down what happened for the 49ers in Green Bay. I wanted to get into Deebo Samuel because this was an interesting game where you come into a game like this, and Lowe, correct me if I'm wrong, Hutch, I know you know how the Niners have handled things like this in the past. You've got a backup quarterback who hasn't played in the NFL, a regular season NFL game in about 3 years. You're without your star left tackle. You're without your star edge rusher. Christian McCaffrey is, you know, just his third game back off of an injury that's kept him out all season long up to that point. You got, like, all the odds stacked against you. In the past, this has kind of just been the moment where the Niners give Deebo the ball and say, go make magic happen, buddy. Like, we'll get you the ball, we'll find a way to give you 10 touches, and invariably he's going to find a way to break one for a 50-yard touchdown. I'll break another for 37 yards, and I'll break, like, four tackles along the way. And if you're going to win the football game, it's going to be through Deebo Samuel's individual brilliance. He had one touch in this football game. One touch! And it was on a reverse flea flicker screen, which honestly was fun and cool and good to see. Love to see the creativity from Kyle Shanahan. That was his only touch. He had a kick return that nearly he took it to the house, but it was called back because of a holding. And then he had a couple of other targets in the passing game that he could not catch, and one that he tipped and turned into an interception. No rushing attempts, which is in the past something that he would get like at least 5, 6, 7 of in games like this. And to me, guys, Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers offense only giving Deebo Samuel one touch like that, one manufactured touch, that seems to me to be them saying Deebo doesn't have it anymore. If they've thought he had it and he was a way for them to get the offense going, they manufacture 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 touches for him in that game, and they only manufactured a single one.
No question. It's clear to anybody that's watching the tape, and it, I think, explains a little bit of why Deebo is especially bristly this season, is that he's not the same. And you look at it, he's just not moving the same, and stuff hasn't been blocked well for him, of course. But in years past, stuff was blocked terribly for him anyway, and you send
it didn't matter.
And it did not matter. Deebo was the king of the most impressive 3-yard rush you'd ever seen in your life, where he's getting swarmed behind the line of scrimmage, and you could count on him almost every single time he touched the ball to break a tackle. And he just does not have that. You look at some of the advanced stats of him as a ball carrier compared to every other, he is dead last in EPA per rush, you know, explosive play rate, success rate, whatever you want to use. He's been their least effective runner. And a lot of that, again, not blocked well. But you can tell that they've seen what we've seen, in my view, and it's not working running him like that, like it has in the past. Josh Jacobs breaking tackles like vintage Deebo, but I just don't think Deebo really has it, and you can't keep using him in that way. And you're right. Any other situation previous years, they absolutely would have fed him. I just don't think he has it this year. And, you know, you have to hope if you're the 49ers, it's just a one-year thing. But this is a guy who has a lot of mileage, and you have to worry that it's more of not just this year, but the rest of his career.
Yeah, I think that Deebo can play harder. I think that he thinks he's playing harder, but he can do more. I think that Deebo has to make a conscious effort to catch the ball. When those two other passes were in your hands hit you, you got to find a way to catch those passes. That's just sometimes lackadaisical and just like not paying attention to detail. You expect more from Deebo because he is your leader. And Kyle Shanahan, we brought him on the show. You heard his press conference today. He said, yeah, we try to give him the ball, but he's got to make those two catches. He makes those two catches. Those are chain movers. Those are first down. And now you can get more targets. But I think Deebo himself, I think that he, you know, that this guy would tell you, yeah, look, there used to be better runs, but I think that if you look at McCaffrey, if you can go over his stats and, you know, now they do the warp and all those things and all the things they have, the analytics, and you can look at his numbers and say, man, what's going on with that? And I don't think there's nothing wrong with McCaffrey. I think that he needed to get round back into shape, but I also think that the line's not as good as it used to be. I think that you're not getting push off the line of scrimmage. I watched McCaffrey run the ball, and there's nowhere to go. So I do believe that Debo can play better. I do believe that Debo has taken a step back, and I think that I don't think he's – I think he still has it. I just don't think that he's putting the effort in the way that he's capable of. And when Debo was going, the team was going. When Debo goes, the team goes. Right now, I don't know if Debo, if he was playing at his best, do you win yesterday? I don't think so. I just think that right now you're a team that's going through it. You're having a bad year. You have an off year. And you just don't have it. No matter what this team does, offensively, defensively, they're just behind. They have not done it this year. They're not a second half team. They've squandered leads every single game. They had one game that just dominated. And that was against probably the Patriots. But when you think about, they've almost given up every single game this year. They've almost lost in the end of these games.
Yeah, that's interesting though. So you still think Debo has it in him? But maybe
I'd say that's worse. That's worse if he's still got it and he's just not giving it his all. I'm not going to guess or speculate how much effort he's putting in, but that would worry me just as much, if not more.
I just think that I know what you're saying, and maybe I'm saying it wrong, but I think instead of saying okay, like I've seen Debo in some of the stretch plays where he just runs and he gets to the line and it's like three or four dudes out there and he just keeps running out of bounds. Where last year he would have turned his shoulders, made a guy miss, run over another guy, and maybe picked up a couple more yards. So I just don't know if he's saying mentally, do I take these two, three extra hits for who, for what? And it's hard because you guys are saying, God, that makes it sound worse. I don't know, does it? If he's running to the sideline, you see it, and he's like, he's running out of real estate. There's three guys there, and he just says, I'm just going to get 1 yard and get out of bounds, compose it, put my foot in the ground, get north and south, and go pick up another four or five. I don't know. I haven't seen that.
It's easy for Hutch and I to probably say that because we don't know what it feels like to turn up field when you've got a linebacker and two defensive backs bearing down on you.
So I'd go out of bounds.
I'd go out of bounds, too. I wouldn't even take the ball in the first place. But I think where maybe there's some frustration is if that's the case.
I know.
It's been something that's happening all year. And, fair enough to say, all right, Debo, pick your spots. You're down 20 points in the second half against Green Bay. You're about to fall to 5-6. Is it worth it? Sure. Okay, but was it worth it week 5 or week 4 when you lost to the Cardinals at home? And, I mean, he's had a couple of nice moments here and there, but this has been something that's been happening all season. And when it was happening earlier in the season, this is still a team that had everything that they set out to accomplish in front of them.
Last year, you guys remember Debo and the year before where how many times you've seen a guy has his leg and he's pulling the guy on his leg and he sees him coming and he jumps and gets through. I've seen it.
So Countless times.
I mean, to be clear, I think Debo Samuel was at 2021 where he carried this offense single-handedly. He's one of the most dynamic football players I've ever seen in my life.
We'll never see another 2021 Debo.
No question. No question. But I think you need.
But he doesn't need to be that in 2021.
No.
Right. He needs to be 60% of that, and he's not even close to that, in my opinion. I just think it's tough to go from watching a guy who is that dynamic, who fundamentally changed what the 49ers could do with their offense, created a quasi-position of the wide back, to go to what he is now, where they're not even looking to feed him in a game where this would normally be, all right, let's be physical, let's put the ball in Debo's hands, he will turn some mediocre blocking into positive plays. And they didn't do that.
Is that the same with Brandon Ayuk? Because before he got injured, he was dropping passes, not catching. You didn't see the same type of Ayuk that you. So you had a bad day. I just think they're bad this year. You guys have seen running backs that go from a great year and just fall off and then come back. I mean, I've seen quarterbacks. Shoot, they ran the Rams quarterback out of L.A. They ran him to Detroit. They said, get out of here.
Yeah.
Jared Goff, he was like, he was a bust. Everyone said he couldn't win. And I was one of those guys. He couldn't go win the big one. He's just like, he's a game manager. He doesn't throw the big ball. Jared Goff, he's just a guy. And look what he is now. So it's like, do we throw these guys away? I think the guys can have an off year and still bounce back. That's all I'm saying.
I don't disagree at all. I do think Debo is particular in the fact that Kyle Shanahan has spoken explicitly multiple times that over the offseason they have to make sure he stays in shape and doesn't gain weight. That was something coming out of South Carolina.
He's South Carolina eating that good food, getting that fried chicken and... You know, fried okra.
I don't blame him.
I don't blame you. You in South Carolina, Debo eating them pig feet. Debo grubbing. He getting his grub on, man.
Getting to me.
But he does. He gets a little. He can blow up. But Debo
It's something where you worry
about.
You want
your cornbread, by the way? You want your cornbread?
But like, also in 2021, let's not pretend like he was in the best shape of his life in 2021 either. I mean, he was a big dude in 2021.
It's just that he's a guy that I think most people feel for at some point when the wheels fall off, they're going to fall off and it's going to be a hard fall with him in particular. And so you worry that this is that point. I'm not saying necessarily definitively it's it, but there are signs that, you know, the way he's been used in the past is not viable anymore. And if that's the case, he's not a really true receiver. He can win in zone, but he cannot beat man coverage for the most part. And that's how the Chiefs dominated the Niners in the Super Bowl. You got to worry about him. And if he's not providing that second option as a runner, I don't know what he is.
And this is the thing. He's 28 years old. We saw the speed last night. You saw him still make people miss and pick up that big return. So what's in there? I think if he's a guy that you line up in certain situations, third and short, fourth and one, or something like that, and you got him in that bunch. He's next to you know, the tight end, and you fake the run, and he's going to be dragging across. You have to put him and scheme him open on certain things. I totally agree with you. He doesn't beat the press very well. He can't beat man coverage consistently. So you're right. But he is physical, and he can beat guys up, claw him, and he's quick. So I think you have to find a way to get him in the right spot, scheme him open, to do those things. And that's what makes Kyle Shanahan great. That's what made him great. That's what made him so elite of a coach, because he knows how to get guys open and makes – average guys look better than average, and Debo's far from being average. He's a great talent. I just think that this is a bad year for a lot of guys. They haven't found it, and it's going to be interesting to just see how they rebound after the season.
Yeah, I also think losing Ayuk, the fact that he was a guy that really challenged defenses, I think you could have mixed in Ricky, and if Ricky Pearsall was healthy from the start of the season, in an ideal world, they would have had Ayuk as the X, and they would have, I think, mixed in Pearsall with Debo a little bit and taken some of the load off of Debo, where he didn't have to be in every single down player, and maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think if they had those guys, there would have been less on his shoulders, and maybe he would have looked a little better, but that's not where we are.
So where do you guys put, Jennings? Is he an X or Z, Y? What position do you put him?
He's traditionally a slot, but now Kyle trusts him to play the X, which I think he can, but he doesn't have any sort of the breakaway speed that someone like Debo or Ayuk have. And so,
but do you need it?
I think
does Pearsall have it? Does, when you watch the Chargers play and you watch McConkey play, do you need the breakaway speed to play X or Z? Keenan McCardell, when he was at his highest, when you see great receivers, Jerry Rice ran a 4.7, 4.6. So everyone talks about the speed. I get guys that can take the roof off the building. They got to have a vertical guy to go vertical. But do you really need that type of guy in today's NFL to be able to say, can he beat coverage? When you look at Jennings, 160 yards, more receiving yards than any of these receivers ever did in one game. So can he play at a high level? Do you need a guy to be a speed burner to be able to play X or Z?
I don't think he necessarily needs to have that top-end speed, and he never will. But for this offense to have those explosive plays where it's run after catch, I think that's something that they like. And he's so physical, he can still rip those off. But it's a different thing than when IU catches it and immediately has a platform for an easy 15 yards. I just think it's different. And they've counted on that speed and that timing. And it's different with Jennings, which is not a criticism of Jennings. I'm just not sure Like, that's not his natural position. Yeah. And he's playing really well. It's just a different type of offense.
Juwan could play anywhere for me. He's just that dude, right? I love Juwan is an amazing football player. But I think Hutch is onto something when you talk about without Ayuk, you don't really have a lot of guys out there who can beat man coverage. And that's where you thought Ricky Pearsall was going to come in and be able to do that. But, I mean, he last couple of games barely getting targeted at all. I also think the other thing that's interesting is if, as you're talking about, Debo still has it in him to break off a great play here and there. I find it hard to believe how he's only getting one touch in a football
game.
You
think he should
like
be getting more? So
like,
you're on the fence of saying I want to see more Debo.
I mean, it's
either
it's Debo Samuel doesn't have it anymore, and Shanahan and the Niners know it, so they're not giving him touches, or he has it and he's only getting one touch. I mean, it's terrible both ways. I mean, just I have found some of the numbers here. So like the example that I'm thinking of is Niners backs up against the wall. You got to get a win. Maybe you have some quarterback concerns. All right? What do? You give the ball to Debo. Go back to 2021. Niners were 3-5. Monday Night Football against the Rams. You lose that game, you're probably benching Jimmy and you're going with Trey Lance. Like, it was a must-win football game, of course. We know they won it, and they went all the way to the NFC Championship game.
Should have gave Debo the ball in that NFC game on that, probably yep, win that game,
probably.
Right?
That 2021 game against the Rams, 10 total touches, 5 catches, 5 carries. Later on, that same year, week 17, a Trey Lance start against the Texans at home. Win, and you keep your postseason hopes alive. 10 total touches. He had 3 catches, but 7 rushes. The next week, week 18, in L.A. against the Rams, win, and you make the playoffs. Debo Samuel, 12 total touches, 4 catches, but 8 carries. You go into the postseason in Debo's career. Take out his rookie year when he wasn't who we now know Debo to be. 13 touches, 11, 12, 11, 12. 2 against Green Bay last year because he was hurt. 11, and then 6 in the Super Bowl. I say all those numbers just to say, when the Niners are in situations where they have to win, or they're looking at maybe their season over, or where they're dealing with a backup quarterback, or with a guy that they don't have a ton of confidence in, they just endlessly give Debo the ball. And not just like target him 10 times in the passing game. Give him carries. Give him those manufactured touches. And there was one manufactured touch yesterday. That, to me, suggests either the Niners have lost confidence in his ability, or it was just mismanagement. Because if you still believe Debo can do what he's done in the past, and in that situation yesterday he only gets one touch, I don't know how you can make an excuse for that.
And it's interesting because, you know, they put him back at the kickoff. They still trust him to be explosive there.
Yeah, and he was explosive.
And he was. But it's clear that, I think, two things. Debo's not what he was. But he's still got something in there, right? Like Lowe's talking, he's still got some in there. I just think it's far, far less consistent, and it's not as explosive as it was. And so I think there is a realization that all those jet sweeps and all those stuff, they're not being blocked well enough, and Debo's not quite as explosive as he once was to make up for the poor blocking. And so those are probably going to be negative plays anyway, so why run it? I think that might be where they're coming from.
Maybe just a perfect storm. A couple of things coming together. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough because you guys are both making very valid points, and watching Debo and seeing the lack of productivity from this guy who's your superstar. And when the games were still in the ballot and still so much up to grab, Debo was huge. Like you alluded to, it was give the ball to Debo, either throw it to him, let him run it. Do something. Yeah. Let this guy touch the ball because he could be our savior. And you have not seen that this year. But I think this is a different team, though. I think that you guys have to look at the situations when you were in it last year and the year before when Debo did those things. Things were different. The team felt different. You were in a different vibe. You were winning. Debo would take over. Your defense was playing a lot better. Your defense is a sieve, guys. This defense is ferocious. I mean, yesterday was what? Green Bay went 5-for-5 in the red zone, and third down they started
6-for-7 on third downs.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It got better in the second half, but yeah.
And so you can't win that, and it deflates your offense when you're playing like this and your defense can't help you, your offense can't help you. You're not playing complementary football. Your offense is not complementing your defense. Your defense isn't complementing your offense. Teams can run the ball all over your defense. Your offense can't run the ball. You used to sit there and watch. You remember those guys on the Niners defense would stand up and watch the show from the offense and just like our offense is going to and they would just watch them just grind and eat. Have you ever seen this? This team does not have that. And if you remember our defense was three and out, people were going crazy. The place was just the defense, you try to run against them. I mean, it was stingy.
There used to be that full belief that
that bully
that you could just lean on them and their identity. I think we talked about it before, but it was to be physical. It was as simple as you can possibly get in football, right? It's to build up an elite defensive front that can be. It wasn't to their philosophy hasn't been to be dominant against the run, but they had enough talent to be decent against the run and when it mattered, be physical and challenge teams in the run game and then get after them in the pass game. And then it's to run the ball and outside zone and counters off of that. And they just have not, that's their identity, and they have not gotten to that. There's been no level of execution in those key elements. And when you don't have that and you don't have a clear identity, and all these guys with contract stuff in the offseason and didn't have real practices. You enter the season on the wrong foot, and then the way they lost those early games just puts such a sour taste in your mouth where you're like, we believe, right? And everyone's like, yeah, I still believe. But no one really believes. And so it's just, you're right. I think it is possibly just a one-season thing, but they are off this year in a number of ways, and it's not just one thing.
No, it's really not, and you just watch them the way that they play. It's just like you're like, wow, who is this team? Kyle Shanahan. When you heard him in his presser today, and I don't know if you guys can get that part up, where he says it's different when the running back is 5 to 10 yards down the field and no one's touched him. It's hard to make tackles because they got space. Usually, you make guys stop their feet in the backfield. Now the cavalry can come and help them. McCaffrey can't be explosive because when he's run into that track, then he has to come to a complete stop. The pursuit comes and get him. When he used to have the lanes, he'd run to that track, and now he puts his foot in the ground and get north and south and just, like Steiny was saying, and see a hole and he would hit it because he didn't come to a complete stop. He was running, he sees it, puts his foot in the ground, and then he got north and south. Now he's running, he has to come to a complete stop because there's a new line of scrimmage. It stopped him in the backfield, and now when he tries to stop and restart again, the pursuit gets him. So it's a different type of running game, it's a different type of everything, and that's what Kyle Shanahan, we talked about what they were able to do in the running game yesterday, Green Bay. Kyle Shanahan talked about how the running back was able to get 4 or 5 yards down the field before he was even touched. That's why you had guys miss a lot of tackles.
Yeah, yeah, and we can hear Shanahan explain that coming up on the other side. We'll take a quick break. I also wanted to throw back to something that defensive coordinator Nick Sorensen said a couple of months ago about missed tackles because I think it is very relevant now. It might not make a lot of Niner fans happy, but we can hear that. We got a lot more to get into. We've got a little more than an hour left. It's Willard and Dibs. No Willard and Dibs this week. Mark Randy, Low Neal, Jake Hutchinson. We're back with more here on 95.7 The Game in just a little bit. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. More next on 95.7 The Game.
Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Come on, sing it, Lenny Kravitz. Come on.
Okay. Help me out, guys.
I'm not doing that. Welcome back, Willard and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. No Willard and Dibs, though. That's the great Low Neal. That's Jake Hutchinson. Low, one of the greatest fullbacks of all time. Definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And Jake, of course, you read them all over 957thegame.com, covering everything in the Bay Area, specifically 49ers. Nothing this guy does not know about the 49ers. I'm Mark Randy. Awesome to be with both you guys, and thanks to everyone out there for tuning in on this Monday. Happy early Thanksgiving to everybody out there. It hasn't been the brightest day here in the city. First of all, it is gloomy and wet and windy out there, but also the Niners fell to Green Bay yesterday, 38-10. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, check out how both the Morning Roast Fontaine, Shasky, and Steiny and Guru reacted to the Niners' 38-10 loss yesterday. And guys, we were just talking about Deebo Samuel and only one touch, and what's changed? Is it the blocking? Is it the offensive line? Is it Deebo losing a step? What is going on here? He's also been in the news a little bit lately because he's been firing back at some people on social media. I don't know if you saw this, Lo, but T.O., one of the greatest wide receivers of all time, was on the Morning Roast earlier, or it was last week, with Bonte and Shasky, and essentially said something along the lines of, Debo's a little more concerned with his pregame outfit than playing on the field. And then he said, I say that tongue-in-cheek, but he said it, and then followed up after and said, I said it tongue-in-cheek.
It didn't sound very tongue-in-cheek. Wow.
Deebo saw it, took to Twitter, and essentially said, T.O., like, cut it out, man, and then I think a ninja emoji on the end of his tweet. And then Deebo follows it up with what he did yesterday, which, as we've already talked about, not very good. Well, not a very good Deebo Samuel game at all. And then, on top of that, he refused to speak to the media post-game. I know you come from a player's background, and Jake and I more so a media background, so we might see this differently. But Deebo Samuel, after what happened on social media last week, and then after that game yesterday, and then not speaking with the media, what do you make of all of this, Lo?
You know what? When you are on top, and things are great, and you win Super Bowls or you go to playoffs, you're in Pro Bowls, all those things, it's easy to talk to the media. When things are tough and adversity strikes, it gets a little tougher. But those are the times where it matters the most, because it's easy when you're on top to be able to say, hey, how's everything going? You got your pockets are full. You got plenty of money. Everything is okay. So you're just laughing. You're just enjoying life. But when adversity strikes and you're a player and you compete and you know, and people are coming at your integrity and question your manhood and question who you are, and you've been, for so long, you've been think about Pee Wee, Pop Warner, been a kid playing a game that you've loved for so long, and you're a grown man playing a kid's game, getting a king's ransom, and you're getting that ransom that's changing your life, your family's life, and putting you in a situation that you don't have to necessarily work like every Tom, Dick, and Harry that's out there in the real world, because you're getting paid millions of dollars. And it's tough. But that's the time that you have to stand up and look in the media and say, you know what? I didn't get it done. I fumbled a ball. I missed the block. And dude, LT's career-winning touchdown where he broke the record, I fall down on 70, on 70 Bob on the play. It's a boss, back on backer. That's what it stands for, boss. You pitch the ball, back on backer. So I got the safety. I fall down. I'm thinking, okay, get on my hip and don't dip. I'm excited. I say, this is going to break the single touchdown record with LaDainian Tomlinson. Pitch the ball. I come out of my stance, getting ready to knock someone out. I slip. I'm falling. There's three guys there, a corner, a safety. And I like put my head down, like close my eyes and like, oh, I'm waiting to hear the crowd boo. And they cheered. He set three guys down and scored the touchdown and still got an end zone. You have to own it. I mean, so yeah, I'm glad that he scored, but it's tough sometimes because you've been revered so much as such a great and elite athlete. And then when you fall off or things happen and you don't play as well, it's hard to go in front of that camera and tell them, hey, look, I got to do better. I'm required. I'm the leader of this team. I'm required to make plays. I suppose when the ball's thrown to me, I have to catch the ball. When I get the ball, when my number's called, I have to make plays. Guys are depending on me. This is why I got paid I get paid to be a superstar. You got to own that stuff, and it's tough, but you got to own it.
I'm glad you said that, Lo, because here's the thing with Deebo and all this. I think as media members, especially sports writers, we can make our jobs holier than thou and lift up the importance of, no, it's really important, and it's not always as important as it's made out to be. But I do think Deebo Samuel is a captain for the San Francisco 49ers. And maybe that doesn't mean anything, but it's supposed to mean something. And if you are a captain for a team and you lose in a tough game where you didn't play well, it's your job to go out there and talk to the media. And Deebo is not going to say anything anyway. Deebo's hard to talk to. And that's his prerogative. He can say whatever he wants. But as a captain, you're supposed to go out there, and if you say nothing at all, that's fine. But at least face the media as a captain, as somebody who's supposed to be a leader, and show your rookies and the other young guys who look up to you and say, this is my guy, this is my vet, that, okay, you're going to be mature and just say, we lost, it's tough. Or do the Marshawn Lynch thing and say, I'm not answering any questions. I don't think that's necessarily the most mature way to go. But at the very least, you are standing up and saying, we lost, I don't want to talk about it. That's okay. But to just not talk when you're supposed to be a representative, a veteran, and I know it's hard, and I wouldn't want to be in that situation. No one really wants to ask him questions anyway, but you have to. That's just part
of it.
That's your job.
And that's his job. And that's what's tough because, you know, you lose a big game and things are not going well, and it's tough, man, to go and answer. But you have to realize the sun's still going to come out tomorrow. Debo and players, I had to recognize it. People have to recognize these sports talk guys and guys that are in the media and women that are in the media, they're getting paid. They have to. The fans want to know. You have to realize the fans, Debo, they love you. You guys love watching Debo play. So it's like players have to realize you guys have a job to take the message to the fans, to the street, to put it in the paper. And these guys, these regular fans that support, buy tickets and go to games, is using their earnings to go watch you play. They want to know. And you guys are in the locker room. You guys are there to be able to give the message for the fans to be able to feel like they're a part of that. And that's what players have to realize, no matter what, how difficult it may be, how tough it may be, even adversity, that you have a job to do because everyone feeds one another. And we all have to support, we all are in this together no matter what. They ask the tough questions. And yes, some of the media can be brass and they ask, hey, why aren't you, what's wrong? Why didn't you catch the ball? And you look at them like, what the hell? You think I'm trying to drop the pass? But no, but they have to ask.
Right.
Hey, you know what? I took my eyes off the ball. Hey, I got to do a better job. I got to catch it. I got to see that ball. I got anxious and I took off. It's, you know what? If you give the answer instead of saying, well, you thought I tried to drop it? Man, why are you going to ask me that? What I mean? What do you mean? When you do that, you put up the defense and just, man, I got to catch that. You're going to respect him more. People are going to be willing to understand that. And that's what guys have to. And it's tough, man. It's easier said than done, you know. But you got to do it because it's your job and you're supposed to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's how George Kittle face the media, and obviously it's easier for Kittle yesterday because he had himself a really nice football game, one of the few Niners that showed up and played a really good football game. Here's something that George Kittle said post-game yesterday facing the media and, you know, dealing with questions about, you know, a 38-10 loss, not easy for anybody to swallow. Here's Kittle.
I mean, we're not where we want to be by any means. Losing by 28, you know, that's horrible. We don't want to do that by any means. Obviously, you got to watch the tape. And I think our first two drives, penalties backing us up, kind of put our defense at a disadvantage. I think they were at, like, it felt like they were on the field the entire first and part of the second quarter. So time possession was tough. I feel like that's something that I try to emphasize every single week. Like, hey, what are your goals of victory? Hold on to the ball, run the ball a ton, don't turn the ball over. And I don't think we did any of those three things tonight. So I think that's why we lost like that. We had, what, three turnovers in the second half. They were 5 for 5 in the red zone. That's really tough. Hard to win on that as well. But no, my optimism is not broken by any means. We still have a lot of very talented players. We will get some guys back. And I still have full trust in the coaching staff to put our guys in position to make plays. And we got no worry about that. But definitely uphill grind. And going to see what we're made of, which I'm looking forward to.
Well, that's a guy who gets it. I mean, obviously, again, it's easier to say it when you go out, when you had a touchdown and you were the driver of the offense, only 10 points score, but you were the driver of those 10 points.
But he was stay consistent. That's who he is. Tough times don't last. Tough people do.
And Kittle's definitely a tough dude.
He's a tough dude. He didn't want to go out there in it, but he owned it. He talked about, hey, we got to get the ball. We got to run the ball. We got to be more physical. We left our defense out on the field. He acknowledged. He said, hey, this is what I take responsibility for. You own it. And he's had bad games, and he's been on teams that you lose, but he still goes out there, and he has to give the media something, and it's like, it's not fun. I think he wants to sit there and stand there and give, you know, talk to people like that, but he understands that there is a job that has to be done on both sides.
It's also after you're going to call out your kicker and tell him to lock in and basically ask for accountability in the middle of the game publicly in front of everyone and whatever. You respond to T.O., that's your right. Again, all of this is his right to do whatever he wants. He's made money. He's a successful football player. It's his prerogative. It's just that if you are going to be a quote-unquote leader and you want a team to respond in tough situations, I think it does matter, especially with a lot of young players, again, looking up to you to say, all right, yep, we lost. Rough, but...